Welcome back to the second half of The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. There has been a legal battle brewing about the power of water districts, specifically the Edwards Aquifer Authority, the one we have here in San Antonio, and some local pecan growers. The EAA lost, and then they recently lost an appeal. The courts say that the authority does not have the authority to say stop the pumps when the water table gets low. What does that mean? Does that mean it's back to the catfish farm, especially in this time of drought? Can we afford to the rule of capture, the biggest straw wins? Well, to help us figure this out, Amy Hardberger joins us in the studio. She's an assistant professor of law at St. Mary's University, and she is an expert in water law in Texas, as much as anyone can be an expert in Texas water law, because it seems to be in a state of constant flow here. So welcome to The Source, Amy. So explain to everyone, if the EAA, the Edwards Aquifer Authority, these are the guys that say we're in stage three, stop the pumping, how can they do that if the courts say you don't have the authority anymore?
Well, they didn't necessarily say that they didn't have the authority. What they did say was that in certain circumstances and in certain fact scenarios, if they do deny somebody a permit, they may have to pay them for a takings compensation under the Fifth Amendment. So they still have the authority. They still are operating underneath the cap, but it does somewhat complicate the job that they're trying to do.
Okay, so they're going to have to pay them. So we had a case here locally of some pecan growers.
That's right.
They had a grove, and they're trying to manage that grove, and it's hot and it's dry. It's the drought. Mm-hmm. They started pumping water out. Edwards Aquifer Authority says, hey, you can't do that because we're in restrictions. And so these people are saying, you're endangering my livelihood and my property rights, because under Texas, we have the right to capture. That means if I put a hole in the ground and I can pump out water, all that water, as much as I can take out, is mine. And what right do you have to tell me I can't have what's mine, right?
Yes, for the most part, although it is worth noting that this restriction on the Braggs, which was the family that brought the lawsuit, wasn't just in drought conditions, it was overall. So when the Edwards Aquifer Authority was established, in the 90s, they were told by the Texas legislature that they could not issue permits past a certain amount of acre feet, above a certain amount of pumping. So the legislature also told them that they would have to issue permits based on a historic use system, so how you used the water previously during a certain time frame. The Braggs are in a very unique position because they actually drilled their well in a window between when the Edwards Aquifer Authority actually came into existence and when the historic use sort of ended. So at least one of their wells, their biggest well, was drilled sort of in this little gap period. And so because of that, the Edwards Aquifer Authority, applying what the legislature told them to do, said, we cannot give you a permit for this water because you weren't pumping during the historic use period. And the Bragg said sort of what you said, which was, look, I bought this property with the intention of growing pecans. Pecans take water. I knew that we had right of capture in Texas. I knew that the Edwards Aquifer was below my land. It is therefore a takings for you to now tell me that I do not have the right to pump that water. And the fourth court agreed.
So when they say that the EAA has to pay these landowners to not pump the water, how expensive could that get?
It could get quite expensive. It's important to recognize in this court opinion that there is two major, in my opinion, parts to this ruling. The first was that it was, in fact, a takings. The second part is, how do you calculate damages? And that is still very much up in the air. You kind of have two options. The first option is to value the water that they don't get, the water as a commodity itself. So if you could sell that water for X number of dollars per acre feet, you would be entitled to compensation for the amount of acre footage that you could not pump. Another way, and probably a more expensive way to deal with it, is to say, no, you get the difference in the value of your property with water versus the value of your property without irrigation rights. So the EAA would, all intents and purposes, be paying that delta between what that would be right fully permitted with all the water available in the world versus not. And we don't even know exactly when you should decide to figure out what that value calculation is. Is it today? Is it the day they bought their property? Was it the day that they were told they couldn't take the water?
Our phone lines are open. If you want to ask a question about what's happening with our water rights in Texas and the rule of capture, the number is 614-8980, 614-8980. With me in the studio is Amy Hardberger. She's a professor of law at St. Mary's University and obviously an expert in this area. You've got my head swimming with all this water talk and what's happening. But I know that Texas is unique, right?
Yes, we are the only state that maintains right of capture. So we have a very different system. There's a lot of theories for why we still have that. It goes, you know, way back and sort of would take longer than we have time for. But we do have a very strong connection to private property rights. And if you read the sort of the line of cases that led up to this and the attempts at legislation to sort of go another way, you see that echoed throughout the case law and certainly in this opinion itself. I mean, they really want to protect that property owner and what they wanted to use the property for when they bought it.
As I look at the candidates that are running in this new primary season, you know, they're coming out very strong in protecting our property rights and protecting our right to capture. Though this is something that is maybe under the radar for most people, but this is very, very important to a lot of folks. And so their candidates are trying to be on point on that issue. So it doesn't look like there's any kind of weakening right now in the legislature about trying to redefine our right to capture, even though it's pretty evident to me that we've got to figure out some way to maintain our property rights, maintain the rights to capture water under your feet. But still, at the same time, you know, the aquifer is a common. It is a pool that everyone needs to draw from, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the biggest challenges with water and being in water policy is understanding that systems approach. And the law doesn't really lend itself to coming up with a systems
approach.
Because
when they first came up with this law and this understanding, it was like, it was a mystery. We have no idea how mm-hmm. this works. And this is before we had more, geology and hydraulics and whatever, hydrology.
Yeah, the very famous quote in the 1904 East case, which was the original case that established right of capture, is that water is occult. Occult and mysterious, and that they threw up their hands in some way and said, there's no way that we can understand where that water flows underground, so we're just going to kind of leave it alone. It's very interesting that language, we still sort of see echoes of it, even though, as you said, we have a much greater understanding of what's actually happening and the surface water groundwater relationship too, not just groundwater as groundwater.
So the EAA in San Antonio came about because of the Ronnie Pucheck catfish farm. Old timers in San Antonio like me will remember that, when the guy started pumping all this water out of the aquifer for his catfish farm. And we saw the levels drop, and there was a lot of alarm about what's this doing to our drinking water. Can he rob everyone in San Antonio of water because he has the right of capture?
Yeah, the real trigger for the EAA was the endangered species that depend on the spring flow from it. And when we started having a lot of pumping, such as the catfish farm, that really sort of, and the springs dropped, we really had a sense of alarm. And so even though we have a right of capture, the Endangered Species Act actually trumps our personal right of capture. And that's why we have the EAA here in San Antonio and other districts that are very dissimilar in other parts of the
state. And we're still trying to figure out how much authority the EAA actually has. We're going to continue this conversation about what's happening with the right of capture and water underground in San Antonio and Texas. We're going to talk to Ronnie Hopper, a cotton grower from the Panhandle, when we come back. Stay with us. This is The Source on KSTX. Listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio, Amy Hardberger. She is an assistant professor of law at St. Mary's University, an expert on Texas water law. We're talking about how the courts are dealing with this water puzzle that we have about what's the authority of the Edwards Aquifer Authority and the right to capture, and private landowners, and what are their rights, how their rights are being eroded away or not so. It's all a big question about the water rights. And with me on the line, let's talk to Ronnie Hopper. He's a cotton grower in the High Plains Water District up there as well. Ronnie, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me on.
Right. We really want to tap into your expertise. And so as a cotton grower up in the Panhandle, you guys really depend upon drawing from the aquifer up there, don't you?
Well, that's very true, and especially in times of drought when we're not receiving rainfall, it's even more urgent that we pump the underground water within reason.
So y'all pay a lot of attention to the developments in what's happening with the this court battle in defining what is the private landowner's rights when it comes to maintaining their rule of capture.
That's true. And, you know, in the last couple of years, there's been extra attention applied because the rules of the High Plains Water District changed to January 1st of 2012 to a much more strict policy, and there was an immediate pushback on the part of the landowners when that occurred.
And so what are the concerns?
Well, the concerns are that, let me just give you a little example. Let's say, and this is arbitrary numbers, but let's say the value of non-irrigated land in my area is $1,000. And the value of irrigated land, that land that has the ability to pump varying degrees of underground water, is worth $2,000 to $4,000 an acre. I guess the real concern is for a landowner, and certainly for the district as well, when a person pays $4,000 for land that has the ability to pump large amounts of water, and then all of a sudden there's restrictions to that, how does he pay for that property?
So also there's the concern that y'all are drawing from the Oganagla Aquifer, right?
Ogallala. Yes.
Ogallala. And what is the health of that aquifer right now? Because I keep hearing horror stories.
Well, we don't know, to tell you the truth. I don't think that the hydrology and the hydrological studies are complete enough to make an assumption. You know, we have to be scientifically based in our observations, and we're still working toward that at this time.
So you're with the High Plains Water District, and what is how what's the relationship like right now? And you're also a cotton grower. Does that become a difficult situation?
No, I don't think so. It's something that most of the local growers here in our district really haven't paid attention. It's much like I fancy that people don't listen and look at the facts of what's going on in Washington and Austin because they're so busy with their everyday lives, with family and their jobs and sports and things that, you know, they really haven't taken the time to really analyze the issues. And you know as well as I do, water is a very complex issue, and it's not easily understood just from a passing fancy.
So what do you hope to see happen? Do you think that there needs to be some sort of readdress of the rule of capture in Texas, or should we just let it stand the way it is now?
Well, it's hard to say. I think you have to distinguish the Ogallala Aquifer and contrast it to the rest of the state. The High Plains is principally has the Ogallala, and, you know, there are many aquifers off the High Plains in your area. And so we're all together different. I enjoyed listening to Amy's presentation. I thought it's very accurate. But, you know, my question to her is, do you think that the waters of the Ogallala will ever be used off the High Plains in your area?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question. And certainly, as you know, there have been a lot of moves for that to happen. And one of the things about right of capture, I think what right of capture opens up is the possibility for long-haul transfers of water, because we don't have a prohibition on buying large amounts of water and moving it. And I think that really strikes at the core. I come from a family of Lubbock cotton farmers, so I certainly you know, think about their interests as well. And I think what the right of capture does in terms of a dangerous situation is it sort of sometimes depends on the weakest link. So even though a cotton farmer has really legitimate concerns about the value of their land and of their industry, there's also the danger lurking that someone could, in fact, buy that water and sell it. So I think if the price is right, it can get moved just about anywhere.
So the free market could decide that the water in itself is more valuable than the cotton that it would help produce.
Absolutely. There's an old saying that water always flows towards money, and I think that's never been more true than it is now. And we don't have regulations that are prohibiting anything like that.
Ronnie Hopper, I want to let you go. Thanks for joining us on talking to us and giving us the perspective of what's happening up in the Panhandle, cotton growers, and with the High Plains Water District up there. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, and good day.
Good day to you. So Amy Hardberger, over Assistant Professor of Law, St. Mary's University, it just seems like that we're on a collision course, that we have the rule of capture, the person with the biggest straw can draw the most amount of water and there's nothing that can stop you. And then we had this these water districts trying to manage mm-hmm. the water underground. I don't see how these two things can exist simultaneously, especially with the courts weighing in on the fact that this is, you know, on the side of the private property owners.
Yeah, and if I can add one more complicating element to it, we do have endangered species in a lot of these areas, and we have the connection between groundwater and spring flow. So you may have a permit holder of surface water that's getting all of its water, that all the groundwater pumping means that there's literally no surface water to fill that person's permit, and there's no legal cause of action when that happens.
Okay, we're going to go to the phones. Our phone number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Rachel is on the line. Rachel, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm wondering if this ruling will have any effect on, like, the Cow Creek area. My parents own a ranch outside Bernie, and for several years now, they've been threatened and told they can't use their own water. A well that was there when they bought the place 25 years ago, and they've been told that if they use their water, they're going to come stop their well up even. And I was wondering if this ruling will have any effect on people like that when it's just someone who owns a home property and wants to water their yard.
All right, Rachel, thank you for that question. Amy.
Well, generally, there is an exception for domestic and livestock use. So that's going to be treated differently than like an irrigation permit or a commercial permit. So that's good to recognize. As to whether it will apply to the Cowcrete District in general, I guess the answer is it might. It is important to recognize that the Edwards Aquifer Authority is unique in that it has a state-governed cap with permitting. And so in and of it, that sort of creates a tension that we don't have in other districts. But certainly if other districts, regulate in a way that somebody wants to bring a takings claim and that is found to be sort of an excess of regulation, yes, it can be really effective anywhere in the state of Texas.
So this shows at least, I mean, maybe if this law doesn't automatically apply to other water districts, at least we know that the precedent is there and that if someone challenges the local districts, then they're vulnerable.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest issue is that it doesn't really answer a question. It only answers the question in this particular fact pattern. So this particular fact pattern that what happened to the Braggs, the court found that that regulation, that denial of a permit went too far and was in fact unconstitutional. That doesn't mean that other regulations are going to be found that way. The answer is we really don't know until those particular fact patterns get brought up. The concern is that groundwater districts are going to be spending their time and money potentially defending these type of lawsuits instead of actually doing their regulatory work.
And is that a strategy of some folks? They're trying to hamstring the water districts?
Well, one interesting thing about the law is that if you challenge a groundwater district on a takings and you lose in court, you will be responsible for paying the lawyer's fees of the groundwater district. So they put that in there specifically so that you
would...
As a deterrent, because we absolutely don't want that to be a strategy. That being said, I think there will be more lawsuits than we've had in the past.
But I just keep coming back to the fact that this is like a wild west. We're returning to the wild west. And if we don't have a water district with authority, we're able to enforce these rules, then, and everyone is dependent upon this pool of water that we have. And then no one is, and then the irresponsibility of one landowner could impact, be far reaching and wide.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I love Texas. I'm from here. I love the sort of, Wild West attitude of it. But I think we need to be cognizant of the fact that that even though it's big, it's also crowded. We do have a lot of people. We have a lot of industry. All of that is important. The environment is just as important as power. We all have to live here together. And there's a limited amount of resources that's going to help us do that. So it is really concerning for those of us who, if you want to read about this stuff, it's a little scary.
So is it reasonable to think that there will be some sort of compromise reachable, that the rule of capture works and it's the law and it's effective to a point when you don't endanger the rule, the next guy's rule of capture?
Yeah, I mean, I hope that that's the direction that it moves, because when you take as much as you want, you're not just harming the environment, you're harming your neighbor as well, and that's not good for anyone.
All right, Amy Hardberger, I want to thank you so much for joining us. She is a University of St. Mary's Law School professor, expert on water law. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm always happy to talk about water.
And this is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for joining us.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. David Martin Davies is executive producer and host. Paul Flav is the show's producer. Management and oversight comes from VP of Programming Wayne Coble. Chris Udaly is the TPR web editor. Support for The Source comes from the contributors to the Community Engagement Fund, including the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.